Well, guys, the other day I was talking to our good friend Russ from Creepy Crisis, and I told him that, God willing, there would be a new Pwncast out soon. And he responded with, "Oh, is it that time of year again?" But then I realized that I couldn't actually make fun of him because it turns out he was right. So hopefully we've moved on from that. So, for the Pwncast of Rock, I am Julia.
I'm Cody.
And welcome to the place where the music never ends. As funny if it wasn't true, which it totally was.
Okay, we don't need to get into this again. We were chastising ourselves enough for that last week. Anyway, we're going to be talking about the Weasleys, and to start that out, we're going to be talking about Molly and Arthur Weasley. And I'm sorry, whenever I think about them, it's kind of like, well, thinking about them when they first met is kind of like thinking about my parents when they first met, which is just really strange.
Why?
Because it's like you think about Ginny and Harry and like Arthur and Weasley and your brain just kind of has a firewall and it's like, no, you don't go there.
Well, for some things, but I don't really have a problem thinking about them.
Well, not like that. Yeah.
Thinking about them in their teenage years.
But they're just like so...
You can't yeah. See little...
It's just weird though, because I just have a picture of them as like 40. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But you can't see little Molly and Arthur, like, walking around Hogwarts, going on a midnight stroll and getting told off by the fat lady for turning up at 4 a.m.
And no, wasn't it, like, the groundskeeper at that time that got them in trouble? Like, what was his name?
Right.
I can't remember.
Og. Didn't the fat lady shout about them and then, like, Og came running or they got caught or something like that? I don't remember.
That would be the fat lady who would do that. I really don't know for certain.
Whatever.
It's just hard for me to imagine what Molly's character would be like when she was a teenager, because so much of our character that we know of her is she is a mother figure. She is the mother figure of the series, pretty much. Like, there are no real mother figures. I mean, there are that are sort of like, they are mothers, but their role is not as a mother figure. So that's so much of what I think of her character as. It's hard to think of it when she's just like 16.
Yeah. You know, I agree with you, and I think I can really picture Molly being, like, you know, the one who was always trying to boss her friends around. Not in, like, a Hermione-ish kind of way, but in just, like, a really overbearing, like, meaning the best, but just overreacting to everything kind of way. You know what I mean? I can see, like, I see a lot of Molly Weasley in myself, and there are some times where I just sort of, like, really, like, mishandle situations and just, like, dig my hands in places where it doesn't belong. Hello, Cody. Are you trying to tell me something about the way that I handle certain situations?
No, I was trying not to laugh, and I ended up choking on water.
Job.
So
next time, just let it out, babe. Just let it out.
I was trying. Anyway,
sorry.
I know what you mean.
But yeah, like it's, you know, sometimes you just like. You mean well, but you just get too involved. You just don't always know when to quit. And I can see Molly really being a lot like that.
Yeah, I'm that way when I talk to my friends sometimes about things that I have really strong opinions about. Like, I know, theoretically, that I should just shut up 10 minutes ago, but that it's not going to happen. So, I think with her, it would be more like protect... I don't know. I'm just sort of seeing her through this paradigm as a mother figure. So, everything I'm thinking of her as a teenager... It just means, like, projecting these characteristics back onto what they would be in a 16-year-old.
Well, you know, I've...
Wait, hold on. Doing mental calculations, how old was she when she had Bill?
Oh, God only knows.
I'm trying to figure that out now.
I don't know.
She had, like, a wild teenagehood, and she, you know, was, like, a teenage mother, and she's trying to be very protective because of that, but I really don't.
But you know, I recall from the canon that they were married shortly after Hogwarts. No, that doesn't seem right.
Well, everyone seems to be married shortly after Hogwarts.
Yeah, because...
like Lily and James
were. I seem to recall in Deathly Hallows, Bill had a line about, you know, during the last war, a lot of people just ran off and get married and didn't think about it. And Bill says, oh, like you and Dad? But that doesn't make any sense. Because by the last war, Ron and Ginny were already born. So...
well, we're kind of depending how long we're thinking of this war as. They may have just been, like, the war, like, it may not have been so much a war as just sort of, like, this is, like, Hitler coming to power, you know what I mean? Yeah. And he sort of was there for a while and behind the scenes, and you wouldn't have really noticed him unless you looked for him, and then he started, like, slowly gaining power, so it may have been the sort of same thing with Voldemort. He didn't just, like, come out of nowhere. It could have been just sort of, like, a slow rise, and... but still, I mean, like, you wonder how long before his fall he was at, like, a pinnacle of power, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, at what point he was sort of the big bad force in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And how long he was at that point before he was deposed.
Right. Well,
and we just don't really know that much about the timeline of that.
I think we can probably safely assume that they were married by the time they were 25. Does that seem reasonable?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And
I think that's reasonable.
Now, I don't know when, how long they were married before Bill was born, but...
or after.
Or after. But yeah.
Just opening the options.
Just, I don't judge.
You notice that Molly is sort of very reluctant, at least in the beginning, to have her children involved. And I mean, by the end, she does realize that they really are going to be involved, whether they like it or not. They might as well fight.
No, she
but
doesn't realize that.
I think that she... well, not really, but she realizes it to the
Arthur
extent
Arthur realizes
that,
it, but he doesn't.
Like,
she doesn't, rather.
Well, she's in battle, and she acknowledges the fact that her daughter is fighting people. Even though she doesn't... I mean, like,
okay.
You know what I mean? On a very basic sense, she acknowledges that her kids are involved.
Okay.
So, anyway. But I think she does have a very strong protective streak, and she doesn't want the same thing to happen to her children as happened to other people in her family. But I think she's just sort of... made by these circumstances where it's not, you can't hide from this, you know what I mean? You can't just, I was gonna say, like, dig yourself down into a burrow, but that would just be too convenient of a
time.
And avoid things, but I think that as a mother, she was just trying to protect people, but there are some things that even she can't protect them from.
Right. Now, what do you guys think maybe about the possibility of teenage Arthur?
I would think of him as, like the modern high school equivalent of a computer geek.
Yeah. He was totally a nerd.
He would be the one who was, like, hacking into the school system just to see how it works.
He was. I feel like he was probably, like, taking apart Muggle contraptions, and he probably like, has Newton Muggle studies, and...
oh my gosh. Arthur Weasley invented the internet.
Oh my god. You know what? For some reason, I can see Arthur Weasley in sweater vests.
Oh god.
But I don't think that he can. I don't think he wore one, but for some reason the image just popped into my head. I think he was a little bit too cool for the sweater vest. But not by much.
He's slightly above, there's like a, you know, it's like sweater vests, and slightly below that is like suspenders. You have like the hierarchy. He was slightly above sweater vests.
I feel like he was...
but like below, say, leather jacket.
You know, I feel like he was probably one of those guys who wore like a button-down shirt. With a pattern, patterned button-down shirt.
Yes, exactly.
No tie, because, I mean, he had...
yeah, I feel like he wouldn't be more strict, it would just be more like, ooh, I want to play with this, you know, like the Muggle technology type thing.
I can see, I mean, like, I can, yeah, like, I can see Arthur being, like, sort of, like, definitely a nerd, but, like, cool, like, you know, he, like, knows enough about the world to, like, marry Molly and to, like, you know, have friends and stuff.
You know what I'm just thinking of? All right, doing kind of some mental math in my head. So, let's say that they're 45 in, like, book 5 or something, okay?
Huh.
That would mean they were born in 1950, correct?
Uh-huh.
So, they were totally high schoolers during the 60s.
Oh, my god.
Now, I'm imagining, like, hippies.
I can see Molly wearing a hippie skirt. Can I just say that? I can see that. But I don't quite see Arthur with, like, the long beard and the... with dope and...
No, not quite.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I'm not really sure what I think about Arthur. I think Arthur's just such an... He's a needed balance to Molly.
Yeah, for sure.
And, like, I think either of them... Like, I think on his own, Arthur would be kind of like a Xenophilius type. And Molly would just sort of, like, drive everyone in the vicinity mad and have them, like, stuff her in a closet or something. Because she'd just be so obnoxious most of the time. Like, she's... Molly had, like, a wild carefree youth and, like...
Yeah.
Going around on, like, the back of Arthur's motorcycle. Because he, like, totally he like, had the motorcycle at that point. Or not a motorcycle. Like, he had, like, rebuilt a motorcycle. And then maybe... I always wondered about that. Where did Sirius Black get his motorcycle?
Who knows?
Maybe we should make a theory that he got it from Arthur.
Okay, works for me.
Or something. I don't know. Because the Black family didn't seem like something that would have a Muggle contraption as, like, readily available within the family. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that.
Well, I don't know. Just because, like, it doesn't... And you don't really see Sirius as having, like, a huge fantasy or, like, a huge obsession with Muggle objects. So that's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. And nothing is going to disprove me at this point. So.
All right. Well, since there's no... I can be since right. Since there's no moving you, let's move on a little bit and try to talk about Molly and Arthur as parents or as adults.
Okay. This is interesting.
This is interesting. I think we can't, you know, I know we've tried to talk about them as teenagers, but we really do need to talk about their parenting skills and stuff like that.
We do. Well, I think that I was at a panel, on like a round table thing at Terminus that talked about different parenting styles within the Wizarding world, or within canon, rather. And it was really interesting because it talked about the Weasleys, it talked about the Malfoys, it talked about like Hermione's parents.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, obviously the Weasleys were kind of labeled as, like, the more overbearing kind of, or not overbearing, but they're very much more involved in their children's lives. And I'm not sure what I think about. I think that they do make a good enough balance as parents that sort of you have the father who's more, you know, okay, I'll look the other way.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it's always a don't tell your mother because, and you think that you have that in every family to some extent. You know, you have the parent who's sort of, like, is more, like, tries to be the cool parent. And then you have the parent who's sort of more hardline. And they didn't seem to do a pretty good job. I don't know.
They did. They raised 7 really fantastic children, including Percy. And I think it's, you know, as you said, the balance between the two of them, I think, is really what did it. Because, you know, they're just a good married couple. You know, they're perfect for each other. They love each other. They know each other's strengths and weaknesses and complement each other really well. And I think that the real basis, the reason why everybody loves them so much is because they're such a good foundation on which to build a family, you know? They're grounded in love and they're grounded in morals and teaching their children to do the right thing and to be good people. And I think that because of that, you know, they're just so wonderful and everybody loves them. And they're, like, everybody's epitome of awesome and love.
To some extent, I was sort of, like, glad that we had the development with Percy, because otherwise they would have, like, not reached the legal limit of dysfunctionality. Because if they weren't at least a little bit dysfunctional, I would be a little worried, because every family is dysfunctional in some way.
Oh, that's
But
sure.
I think that Percy's interesting, because I think that Percy kind of represents... Maybe not, like, a flaw in their parenting, but a loophole that couldn't be avoided in their parenting. You know what I mean? You have 7 kids, and the atmosphere of that household is most likely not going to be something that appeals directly to all 7 of those children's personalities. And you see that with Percy,
mm-hmm.
where he is not as much... He is much more into rules because he is the odd one out. And so... Because he can't really find his niche within his own family, I think he sort of tries to please others to such a degree that he ends up being this, you know, very strict on rules person. And I was wondering what you thought about, like, I mean, we're going to talk about Percy later, but how Molly and Arthur's parenting style in regards to what happened with Percy as far as was it part of it? I mean, obviously it was his fault for leaving, but what were the conditions that sort of preempted that and preempted his personality and him being who he is?
You know, that's a good question. I feel like Molly and Arthur really probably did the best that they could with Percy. You mm-hmm. know, they tried, you know, I'm sure that they were always telling off Fred and George for making Percy the butt of their jokes. And I'm sure that they were always telling people to be quiet because Percy was working and, you know, all that good stuff. But, I mean, it's the whole, I guess, nature. Yeah, it's the whole nature versus nurture thing. I mean, you can only do so much, you know?
You know, it's kind of like a school environment, you know? You hear this a lot when you talk about, like, boarding school type things, but it's not going to help you any if kids are kind of, like, teasing you and you go complain to the teachers, because then you're just going to kind of be more of an outcast. And there is that entire little social circle within the kids themselves. And so maybe it was just sort of, there's always an odd one out.
Right.
And so he had just sort of had to fill that role. Right. And, I mean, he came back in the end. He was still, like, had that good core. I think he just was trying to find somewhere that he felt he fit in, like, niche-wise. Mm-hmm. And I think that he sort of found that in a bad place, but he didn't want to give it up because he had finally found it.
Right.
So I think we're drifting off into what is actually going to be one of our later topics, so we might as well segue into some songs.
Oh, you read my mind.
To get us there. Oh, I do that sometimes, I think. Yes. Anyway, we're going to start with Molly Wobbles by Hogwarts Trainwreck.
Guys, this is going to be fun. We're going to play two songs with the same name.
Yeah.
Two songs, same name, different bands. Right.
And you should be able to guess if you are a rabid Wizardrak fan who the second one is, because there are not a lot of bands with songs with this title, and we already eliminated
one. There are, however, a lot of dogs with this name. I know two people who have dogs named Molly Wobbles.
All right.
Well, let's play some of this awesome music. So the first one is Molly Wobbles by Hogwarts Trainwreck.
Wobbles is no lie, you're as sweet as pumpkin pie. Take me as your husband, please, I'm begging you on bended knee. Maybe we could have a son, I think it prudent, just the one. Then we'll be a family, you and me and baby three. Marry me, Molly Wobbles. So the Jack can have a brother. After all, it's just one more. Then we'll be the happy four. These things happen, yes they do. Put more daters in the stew. Now we get to share our lives and call ourselves a happy five. Marry me, Molly. Molly Wobbles, come again. Did you say it came out twins? Doubly blessed, so it would seem. Soon we'll have a Quidditch team. I guess that we're the fertile ones. Amazing that they've all been sons. Each as lively as a snitch. Still I like a little witch. Six wizard boys and one witch do. This house is full and much is true. But Molly Wobbles, I love you. Molly Wobbles, it's a lie. You're as sweet as pumpkin pie. Take me as your husband, please. I'm begging you on bended knee. Marry me, Molly Wobbles.
Superstars on the reproductive scale. comes down to love, and that's what keeps me here with you by my side. I'll be ready to fight, you know. And now let's forget the world and have a romantic dinner and smile, remembering days when I was thinner. Molly Wobbles is what you call me when we're alone together. Molly Wobbles when you say it. I know you'll be mine forever. You may not be but you're quite happy with the simple mobile gadget. Fell in love with you way back in school. Sneaking around, you probably broke every rule. It all comes down to love, and that's what keeps me here with you by my side.
And that was Molly Wobbles by Runa Waslib.
Yay!
And I really, really love this song.
Me too.
This is one of these, like, old school Wizard Rock songs that I've loved for, like, over, like, I'm, like, 2 years now.
Yeah, I often play, I would sing that song to the baby that I babysit for. It's a lullaby, as a lullaby.
Aww.
It's good. Percy, Percy, Percy. Well, we already started talking about Percy a little bit. Is, you know, he's the black sheep of the Weasleys, but he's really not so bad. You know?
He's not. I feel bad for him sometimes. He's, I mean, like, especially in some of the earlier books.
Yeah. He's like, I think, you know, remember because when we first hear his description, you know, like, he's really, like, you know, he's head boy, he's prefect, he wears glasses, he's, you know, as my mother would call, a stick in the mud. You know, and then, you know, when we hear that Bill's got kind of the same description, you know, he was head boy, he's a curse breaker, yada yada. You know, I remember when we first met Bill, I was, like, expecting an older version of Percy and was really surprised to get not Percy. So I kind of think that, like, Percy's like Bill on crack, which is where I was going with that whole thing. And I probably should have just said that I think that Bill is like Percy on crack, but sometimes I like to talk.
I've noticed.
Yeah.
But I think it's funny how we're all like, oh, Percy's such a stick in the mud. And I'm like, wait, I'm the one who's the nerd taking 4 AP classes. and who knows how to record things on the computer. And it's like, I think it's funny that we sort of criticize him, even though I think a lot of people in the fandom are kind of closer to him than they are to someone like Fred and George, which I just find amazing.
For sure. Well, but the thing is, I don't think that Percy is so bad. I think it's that, like, Jo kind of went out of her way to only give us one side of him. You know what I mean? And I also think that nobody is criticizing Percy for being a bookworm. You know, nobody is going to criticize Percy.
Except Fred and George.
But, you know, like, normal people aren't going to... Nobody in fandom, anyway, is going to criticize Percy for reading all the time.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
The reason why everybody criticizes Percy, I think, is because we only see that he doesn't have any fun. You know, if you're in fandom, you, by definition, enjoy fun and enjoy other people. And so far, the only people that we've seen Percy interact with are his family and his girlfriend. So, I mean, we don't exactly have a wide view of Percy's personality. But I think that if we did, we might even...
He does have a girlfriend.
Well, yeah. You know, we might get the occasional joke or something like that. One never knows.
Well, yeah, but I think you only see him through the context of us, through the context of his little brother, who he never really, like, who the little brother who was always playing with the little sister, or through the context of the kind of twins who always had each other and were always sort of on their, you know what I mean? I know with my family, I'm not incredibly open. It was just sort of, I'm much more open with my friends a lot of the time than I am around my family. So I think Percy just has a different set of friends, and we just maybe don't see him with his friends.
That's true. And also, I think that it's a bit of, there's an age gap between Charlie and Percy. You know, right? So I feel like he didn't really have anyone to play with, you know, when he was little. Just because, you know, Charlie was probably already too old to want to play with him, and Fred and George had each other, and Ron and Ginny had each other, so poor Percy was all alone. And when that happens, sometimes you become a stickler for rules.
Exactly. That was me pretty much in ninth grade. I mean, like, I'm seeing a lot of I see a lot of myself, because I sort of just moved somewhere, and I really didn't know anyone. And I didn't, you know, my brother's kind of like, he was like 8 at that point, but he's very much into sports, very, very social. So I sort of, you kind of like retreat in yourself and just sort of try to follow the rules exactly and try to find sort of in a place just by doing things exactly how you're supposed to, which doesn't really work out that well, but I guess it's just your instinct.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that Percy just doesn't really know when to quit. You know, I mean, there's a lot to be said for going by the book, but, you know, when your family's involved, when, I mean, did he, like, honestly think that, you know, the ministry was right and that Arthur was wrong, or was he just doing it to get ahead in life? You know, I mean, it's hard to judge, because, I mean, if he, like, legitimately thought that Arthur was wrong, then either Molly and Arthur failed in their job as parents, or something just went terribly wrong, or that just made him so monomaniacal and power hungry. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm also going to sort of kind of play devil's advocate here, because you sort of have to think of the context that he's living in each day. He goes to work, and they're like, oh, that crazy Dumbledore, he's just making stuff up, he doesn't know what he's talking about, and you hear that day after day. And so eventually you may kind of be like, I know what you're talking about, you know, and it sort of just seeps into your head, and that becomes more of what your own viewpoint is. So I think you have to take into consideration the atmosphere he's living in, which is primarily the ministry that thinks Dumbledore is like a crackpot. Mm-hmm. And even though he may have had something else kind of nagging at him differently from his family, especially his need to blend, his need to fit in, he almost may have convinced himself that it was true.
Right.
Which you do have the capacity to do. You can convince yourself of things, most of the time unconsciously.
That's true.
Just because it's easier to believe that than it is to believe something else.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that it's a human tendency.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point. Like, I had forgotten that Percy does spend his days, you know, pretty much surrounded by people who think that, you know, his father is just some stupid Muggle lover, you know, who's like attached to Dumbledore and who, you know, think that Dumbledore is just like a crackpot old fool, to use Uncle Vernon's term. So, you know, I had forgotten that, and it is a good point that you bring it up. So, I mean, I can, it doesn't necessarily excuse what he did, but I can see that as a justification for it.
Exactly.
Percy, it's the same thing with Ron, you know? I mean, there's six other kids, you know, everybody knows the Weasleys, and, you know, you don't necessarily want to be known just as a Weasley, but as your own person, and especially since Percy is already higher up in the ministry than Arthur, you know? Like, I can see why he would want to do his own thing. I can't forgive him, well, maybe at the end, but I don't like that he put that in front of his family and in front of the Order, even though he's not in the Order. I don't like how easily he bought the lies that were being fed to him.
Yeah. I think he's just sort of an example of the easiest kind of person that you can feed those lies to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he doesn't have the sort of fallback that other people may have. Because he's looking and desperate so much for this acceptance that if someone, you know, uses nice words and uses this, you know, very manipulative tendency to try to convince him of these ideas, I think he'd be one of the more receptive people. So you could even look at him in a more sterile sense as, like, a sociological example of what kind of person is most vulnerable to these kind of ideas that normally you would just be disgusted by, but they can kind of eventually work their way into your system.
Let's play some music, since that is actually why we're here.
All right.
Now timing for the music. We have... I don't know. Should we see how long I can sustain the accent? Should we... All right, let's introduce the next song. I will speak like this. Okay. We have now for you... I think my accent may change sometimes in the middle, but it's okay. The next song we have... A song about a Percy Weasley, about whom we have just been speaking. And the song actually is called Percy Weasley. It's by The Butterbeer Experience, and we hope that you will enjoy it.
Selfish needs before your own family. I think that you're a git, you're rude and mean and bossy. Percy Weasley, how could you ditch your family and side yourself with the stupid ministry? I know that you saw your error in the end, but you still suck, and I will never be your friend.